Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. In her recent report, Strategies for Supporting Frontline Collaboration, author Cassandra Mosley describes collaborative partnerships created by the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management with both private and nonprofit community-based organizations. They've worked together to plan and execute land management initiatives such as ecological restorations. Dr. Mosley joins us now. Dr. Mosley, would you provide us an overview of your report and what prompted your research?
In the case of stewardship contracting, this has been a very interesting tool that the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management have had over the last half decade or so, or almost decade now, to think about how they can restore public lands and create local economic opportunity at the same time. And I got interested in linking together collaboration and stewardship contracting after sitting in a lot of meetings, you know, in Washington, D.C., where I was hearing senior executives and other folks saying, hey, we're collaborating. We've told people to collaborate. They're supposed to be collaborating. And then also hearing and listening in meetings at the front line saying, we wish we were collaborating more. We are trying to collaborate, but we can't do it. And somehow it was hard for the top and the bottom to meet. And what I came to believe and came to see was that that you can't just declare collaboration a strategy. You actually have to create the structures in the agencies to support collaboration. And so what's interesting to me about stewardship contracting is it's been a way that the Forest Service and BLM have taken their desire to collaborate and taken it a big step forward by creating the support structures to make collaboration easier for the agencies.
Dr. Mosley, your research is focused on stewardship contracting. What is stewardship contracting?
So stewardship contracting is a set of contracting authorities that the Forest Service and BLM were given initially through a pilot project in the late 1990s and now through a 10-year authority that allow them to combine the best of service contracting or traditional federal procurement authorities and timber sale contracting, which is the sale of timber. By bringing the sort of the best of both worlds together, that allows them to do on-the-ground restoration work in ways that are just not possible when you have to use one kind of set of contracting authorities to sell timber and another set of contracting authorities to purchase services. But when you're really working to restore ecosystems on public lands, you really need to have a whole bag of tools together in one contract. It reduces the impact on the land. It creates more local economic benefit. It creates a lot of administrative efficiencies. So stewardship contracting has been something that emerged as an idea in Montana and some other parts of the West and then has burgeoned over the last decade or so across the National Forest System and the Bureau of Land Management.
We're talking with Dr. Cassandra Mosley, author of a recent IBM Center report, Strategies for Supporting Frontline Collaboration, Lessons from Stewardship Contracting. Dr. Mosley, your report does a wonderful job of outlining four strategies for supporting frontline collaboration. Would you outline these strategies for us?
Sure. I think that one of the things that is critical to for senior executives perhaps to think through is figuring out how to support their collaboration and their frontline staff in collaboration. It requires really changing thinking and changing structures and changing authorities. And so what I realized as I was looking at these examples of stewardship contracting was that, and the whole process that the agencies had gone through to support it, that one of the key pieces of helping local level collaboration succeed is helping the frontline staff by creating the time and the space for them to really develop these collaboratives. Another area is to really focus on what are the rules that need to be changed to encourage collaboration. Oftentimes, this may be really focusing on prioritizing funding for actions that have been collaboratively agreed to. If a collaboration comes together, they spend 2 years reaching agreement, and then there's no money to implement the agreement. That burns a lot of bridges pretty quickly, and the collaboration will dissolve. Another critical piece of that is really to think about the importance of local discretion. If there's no real decisions to be made at the front line, why would citizens engage in the collaborative process if there's nothing to be worked through? So it's critical that people be able to make decisions at the field level. I think another strategy is to provide real incentives for collaboration, whether that's in through formal guidance and requirements that people collaborate, or aligning organizational and personal performance measures so that people are held accountable for collaborating. In both those cases, you can think about encouraging the people who, making it easier for the people who want to collaborate, and creating incentives for the people who are more hesitant. And then finally, the fourth strategy I talk about in the report is to really build the capacity of both the agency and their non-governmental partners to engage in collaboration. And one of the things that's very apparent in stewardship contracting is the importance of well-trained, well-qualified procurement people and staff.
Dr. Mosley, what are some of the challenges for why these strategies are not more widely used, either in other agencies or in other policy areas?
I think there's a lot of diverse reasons why collaboration is hard sometimes. Some of the factors I focus on in this report are really the conflicts between the old institutions that were for hierarchical and the newer desires to collaborate. I think that can be a real area of focus for senior executives. I think at the ground level, at the frontline level, you can both have community reluctance to collaborate sometimes, although I think that's becoming more and more rare, or you can have conflict that's so intense that every time people try to get a group together, it's sabotaged or something like that. You can also see in a land management agency or in other many agencies, people didn't get into the business of being foresters or any number of other federal agencies because they wanted to work with people. They wanted to work with trees, and now they're being asked to work with people. I think, and I do think that the training component and helping the frontline staff understand how to collaborate and what collaboration is a key piece, but also I think there are these larger structural issues that can make it very difficult, whether it's political pressures or lack of authority or just, it's habit. And so habits are hard to break when they're in large bureaucracies.
Collaboration could have sort of a nebulous connotation or could take many forms. Given your research, what is collaboration, or could you provide us with the characteristics of good collaboration?
Sure. Well, collaboration, I think, is a nebulous concept, which means a lot of different things in a lot of different contexts, and that's actually a critical piece of it. But in the case of these forest collaboratives or public lands collaboratives, these are collaboratives happening at the ground level or at the community level, at the frontline management unit level. And they include groups of diverse stakeholders who are coming together in many cases after a long period of intense conflict. And so you have community folk, you have environmental interests, you have industry interests, you have the agency folks, and they're coming together to try to resolve conflict, address complex problems, discover common ground, and then through conversation, through going out into the field and looking at the woods, trying to find some agreement about how to move forward, and then taking action to actually move forward on the agreement that they build. So in some cases, there are multiple agencies at the table. Sometimes there's only one agency and a lot of different community people. But in any case, I think for the Forest Service and BLM, this has really been on-the-ground, muddy boots kind of collaboration. Let me suggest one that I think is particularly interesting, and although, the report has several others. And where I come from, which is Western Oregon, we had a huge amount of conflict in the 1980s and 90s over management of national forests. The Northwest Forest Crisis or the Spotted Owl Crisis came to a head, actually, in the early 1990s. The old way of managing national forests was really no longer possible. But we had gotten to the point where people were screaming at each other, ugly signs and people's bumper stickers and bulletin boards and in storefronts. And it was a pretty rancorous and difficult time. And the agencies, the Forest Service, both the Forest Service and the BLM, it was a real low point, both in internal morale and in their ability to get their job done, because there's just so much conflict. And a national forest in Western Oregon called the Siuslaw National Forest, the supervisor then in the mid-1990s realized that forest, which had been very focused on harvesting timber in a sort of industrial model, that was not going to be the way it was anymore. And he realized he needed to change how his forest was structured, what the goals of his forest were, and that rather than seeing the community as simply the recipients of timber that went down the road or logs that went down the road, that they were partners in managing the land. And that eventually led to something called the Soyuz Law Stewardship Group when the stewardship contracts came about. And the Soyuz Law National Forest went from a forest that was being sued and joined on timber sale after timber sale to one where there's broad agreement about how they can manage the land to restore endangered species, and they still send logs down the road. And so much of that was about restructuring the way that national forests worked internally and building partnerships with the local community residents and finding the common ground about where and how they should harvest timber and where and how they should restore it threatened and endangered salmon runs and spotted owls. I think what was interesting is that this was all well along the way when stewardship contracting came along, and they were able to take this collaboration and catapult it to a whole new level with this contracting authority that allowed them really to integrate the timber sale components and the restoration activities.
With all the research you performed and the interesting case studies you outline in your recent report for the IBM Center, are there any lessons that other federal agencies might learn from your efforts?
Well, I think that there are a number of lessons. In the report, I structure them essentially as, if you will, the lessons are, you know, the strategies and lessons are the flip side of each coin, of the same coin, if you will. But I think that for me, the lessons are about the importance of time and space, that collaboration on the one hand can be frustrating to people because it's nebulous and unclear. On the other hand, cookie cutter collaboration doesn't really work. And that's part of why collaboration is such an important tool, because collaboration is the ability to reflect the local community and context by being different and being adapted to the local social and ecological context. And so one of the key lessons is for senior executives to think through how do they support collaboration without killing it off. You can do too little and it never flourishes, and you can do too much and it becomes, you know, another form to fill out. And how do you strike a balance that really makes collaboration flourish, and while not leaving so much room for maneuver that people can just not bother? And I think a third lesson is that collaboration requires healthy partners as well as a healthy agency. And so figuring out how the agency gets its needs met, but also figure out how you have the partners be able to be real partners to the agency.
Dr. Mosley, what does the future hold?
Well, in some ways, it's very hopeful. Obviously, the federal government had for a long time some tough financial times, and particularly in land management, and certainly we're headed for more tough financial times. But I think what's encouraging about collaboration and the new ways forward is that it does create a lot more trust and support in the federal government. It brings a lot more resources to the complex problems that these agencies are facing. And so I think that after 15 years of extremely difficult politics and change, the Forest Service and the BLM are really beginning to find a way that allows them to function on a day-to-day basis, allows them to achieve their goals, allows them to build the trust and the solutions that they really need with their partners. And so I guess the future for me, for these agencies, holds a lot of hope.
Dr. Mosley, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate your perspective and your time.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
That was Cassandra Mosley, author of Strategies for Supporting Frontline Collaboration, Lessons from Stewardship Contracting, a recent IBM Center for the Business of Government report. The research presented thus far in the special edition of the Business of Government Hour underscores that for collaborative approaches in government to work, it requires a major change in organizational culture. You can download a copy of this report and all of our center reports at businessofgovernment.org. How can new approaches to public-private partnerships enhance food safety? We will explore this and more with Professors Noel Grease and Monica Nogueira when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.